Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Well, here's what's happening. Another episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. I'm Steve Johan with, over a decade in podcasting with no guests. Oh, I shouldn't say that. No co-hosts so far. Brady let me know earlier that he has an emergency that he has to tend to, which it is actually a very important thing that he needs to be at. So he's not here, and Shane is nowhere to be found. He may be showing up a little bit later. But anyhow, we got a great show lined up for you and a really, really super cool guest. Of course, if you're looking at this I'm not going to give away the bag, you know, the cat out of the bag yet, but we got, let's just say, one of the best known drag racers of all time is going to be on with us in the following segment. Before we get to that, though, I got a few things to cover in the latest and greatest in the automotive world, and I came across this great article about Fiat Chrysler Automobiles plans to utilize the colors from farming equipment to enhance the appeal of the Ram truck in the nation's farming communities. The 2018 Ram Chassis Cab Harvest Edition is specifically designed for farming. The truck is visually distinguished by two limited available colors, which is Case IH Red and the New Holland Blue. And there is Shane. He's wandering in as we speak. And the other, Case IH and New Holland farm tractors and other agricultural equipment are manufactured by subsidiaries of CNH Industrial. CNH Industrial in Nevada shares a common ancestry with Fiat Chrysler Automobiles. That's kind of interesting. I didn't even know that. Which, like Fiat Chrysler Nevada NV, I shouldn't say Nevada, NV, which are controlled by Exor, the holding company owned by Agnellis, Fiat's founding family, maybe add. So it's kind of like some inbreeding going on there. I shouldn't say that. maybe some GMO kind of there we go. But anyway, so Case Red and New Holland Blue. Now, I am familiar with Case Red. I'm not sure about the New Holland Blue. That's another tractor company. So
Tractor company.
Yeah. Oh. I was just talking about Ram trucks, and they're going to come out with a special edition with the chassis cab with International Harvester Red and New Holland Blue. And I'm thinking they're going to have to add John Deere Green to this lineup,
there
too.
There you go.
Then I came across this really cool thing. Despite the monsoon-level rain, workers scramble through the mud and debris. They don't have time to waste. Little more than a year ago, nearly half the 827-acre site, we're talking Vietnam, was still underwater of the Vietnam company. But before the year, the first pilot car is expected to assembly, and the company's name is VinFast, and it is a brand new Vietnam-based company, Vietnamese-based company, and they're going to be coming out with retail-ready models expected in showrooms by 2019, barely 2 years after the company was founded. And what's interesting, it says the chief executive officer, and that guy is named Jim DeLuca. So if anybody knows anything about Jim DeLuca, he's the former General Motors executive who was lured out of retirement to come over and help these guys out. But they're doing it 24 months, what typically takes 60 months to do. And, you know, I wish them nothing but the luck. It would be great, the best. Vietnam could use the business.
No doubt. I believe that's the first manufacturing company over there.
It is.
It's starting to rebuild.
I'm all for it. I mean, we trounced that company that country. And anyhow, it's good to see this. And then speaking of Asian companies, President Donald Trump's seemingly ongoing trade war, well, with everyone, as we all know, in the less than robust period for auto stocks has forced Volvo Cars to put off its initial public offering. Volvo Cars, which is owned by China-based Geely, previously announced it was considering an IPO to help raise funds for additional research and expanding of production. However, the current trade tensions between the U.S. and China, as well as Europe, has forced a rethink. Now, I didn't know. We've been doing this show for coming up close to a year, and I didn't know that Volvo was owned by a Chinese-based company.
I always thought Volvo was Swedish.
So did I. So did I. But much like Chrysler is now owned by Fiat.
Yes, yes.
A lot of these namesakes have actually been bought out, purchased, managed by offshore interests.
Nobody's what they used to be.
No, they are not. And then Kia, speaking of not what you think they are, Kia and a clothing designer have partnered up to produce a special edition Kia. The new Telluride hit the runway with fashion designer Brandon Maxwell, launch of his fall clothing line during the New York's annual Fashion Week. Maxwell, a 33-year-old star in the garment industry, has developed close ties with Kia and may even lend his name to future special editions. And so it's kind of interesting. They've got a really cool picture here.
Cool.
Yeah, it's an SUV with a number of custom features, including brush guards, a snorkel for fording deep water, and a ladder meant to make it easier to get up to the Kia's Telluride's big luggage racks. And including is some really nice leather wrapped side mirrors and transparent hat box tied down on the roof rack and a number of other things.
Yeah.
So what's kind of cool is automakers are looking for partnerships.
Yeah, what's the newest and greatest and latest?
Well, if you're a 33-year-old designer making clothing and you're probably aimed at the younger generation.
Oh, yeah.
And Kia wants to hit that. Why not partner up?
Oh, yeah.
Can't remember Eddie Bauer partnering up with
Ford for the
Ford Explorer.
Yeah, all the leather Eddie Bauer edition Explorers.
Yep. And then, of course, Ford partnered up with Harley-Davidson, and they're still doing that with their big pickup truck.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, you know, Ram's doing this thing with the Case, you know, with the International Harvester, Case Red and New Holland Blue. And I'm thinking, now, what if somebody did a Milwaukee Red, as in Milwaukee Tools?
Oh, there you go.
Because that's their brilliant red. It's a well-known tool in the trades.
Yep.
You could even do another one. If they didn't want to do it, you could do a DeWalt Toyota truck. I mean, you could just basically take the Toyota
and make a DeWalt out of it.
And make a DeWalt out of it.
Nice and yellow.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are a lot of things that guys in the trades. And then the other thing is maybe they could do Carhartt. Because Carhartt, you know, maybe a Chevy Carhartt truck edition. Put the Carhartt. Could you imagine making seats out of Carhartts?
Oh, yeah. That'd be durable.
It would be very durable. That heavy duck, the kind of stuff you can.
Yeah.
Takes 3 years before your pants can actually
move.
Move. Because I've got some. And they're paint splattered. And it's like about 10 years old or longer. And I'm like, oh, they're comfortable
car
now.
Car and customs paint splatter are already done.
Exactly. So maybe that's it. So if you guys in Industry Insiders, you're thinking about some partnerships, we just gave you some. And then speaking of Chevy, they've come out with, this last year they gave the Colorado pickup some serious off-road chops with its introduction of the ZR2. Now it's pushing even further in addition to the ZR2 Bison Edition. The latest variant of the midsize truck comes out of Chevrolet's first collaboration with premium off-road aftermarket company, American Expedition Vehicles. As it turns up the heat in the niche-oriented pickup truck, long dominated by guess who?
Ford?
Nope. We're talking the midsize off-road trucks.
Oh, midsize.
Toyota.
Toyota. Oh, yeah.
Toyota Tacoma. They rule. They really rule. And I'm thinking Bison Edition. Is that because they're
big
going
and bulky?
And they're going against Ram.
Yes, this is true.
Mountain goats, mountain sheep, which are rams. Mm-hmm. And now you got bison, which range around on the plains.
Yes, big buffaloes.
Well, maybe that's it. That's part of their ranging thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I came across another one is Don Panos, P-A-N-O-Z, chairman of DeWalt Delta Wing Technology Group, a designer of high-end sports cars, race team owner, has passed away at 83. So, speaking of longtime race guys, we've got a very cool guest coming up next. So stand by. We'll be right back with more of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. For all your parts cleaning needs, turn to Ravenstone Vapor Honing. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is a fast, economical, safe alternative to standard media blasting. Ravenstone Vapor Honing uses a system developed by Rolls-Royce back in 1944, a water-based cleaning system that restores parts back to factory condition with no scouring or heating to metal or damage to rubber and plastic parts. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is located in Snohomish, Washington. For all your parts cleaning needs, turn to RavenstoneVaporHoning.com. Redefining the way parts restoration is done.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit Father.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone.
Hey everyone, Steve Johan here, producer of the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Show. If any of you have ever thought about or ridden a motorcycle, then I want to invite you to listen to a new show called World of Motorcycling, where we cover rider culture and the motorcycling world. World of Motorcycling is an informative and entertaining podcast featuring John Davis, Walt Fletcher, and me, Steve Johan. You can listen to the show at worldofmotorcycling.podomatic.com, where we'll be waiting for you.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Welcome to the second segment of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. It's time for the windshield view. And this week, we have a special guest, Big Daddy Don Garland.
Shane.
Garlets.
That's because, Garland, Shane, Garlets, you're pretty nervous, aren't you?
Yeah, a little bit there.
Yeah. The big.
I grew up watching him race.
Oh, yeah. That's a thing. So, yes, we have Big Daddy Don Garlets, National Hot Rod, Drag Racer, Hall of Famer, you name it, trendsetter, world record setter, and owner of the...
All-around nice guy.
Oh, yeah. Don Garlitz Museum. How's it going there, Don?
It couldn't be better. I'm happy.
Cool. Well, you're down in Florida, so tell us what town you in.
We're in Ocala, Florida. That's a little town a little bit north of Gainesville, about 80 miles south of Tampa.
Oh, very good.
North of Gainesville.
Very good. You got a lot of gators in that area?
It's funny you ask that. I have a lake house, which I have removed 9 so far.
Wow.
Well,
that's a lot of boots.
Some pretty good size.
Wow. Well, you know, I was thinking of the passing of Burt Reynolds, who lived in Florida as well, and he had that movie Gator. And then the second part, which was White Lightning, and this was prior to the Smokey and the Bandit series. But, yeah, his name was Gator, and he was down south. And so, and then you are also known as the Swamp Rat.
That's right. Been called that since 1959.
Wow.
So how'd you get that name?
One of my fierce competitors, the fiercest one, in fact, at that time, was Sarah Postoian from Detroit, Michigan. And he put an ad in the Drag News, a half page, I might say, ad. And it said, headline, it's no wonder they call you the Swamp Rat. And then went on to ramble on about why I was a Swamp Rat. And what it was getting up some match races, because in those days, they hired the dragsters to come in and do 2 out of 3s. Yeah. There wasn't enough cars, and there wasn't enough crowd to have a big show like that hadn't happened yet. The first big show wasn't going to happen until March of 59. This was a little bit before then. So it was a publicity stunt. And he was a little bit peeved anyway. I was getting some good runs in, and he didn't like that. So he made a couple of comments about it. So I just painted it on the car.
There you go. Own it.
Well, that is so cool. I didn't even know that. And you've probably told that story many a time, but that is an amazing story. And so we're talking early 59 that this took place, and then the so when
what were you running back then in 59?
Yeah.
What the speed?
No, what were you running? What was with the vehicle that you were running?
It was we call it a Shrimpert 1 now, but it was just my dragster. It was a homemade dragster built on 1931 Chevy frame rails. And, it was a big Chrysler engine on nitromethane. And it was the driver sat behind the rear end for traction.
Yeah.
They spun the tires from the start to the finish. And it held. It was holding the record at the time when he put the ad in the paper.
Well, now, you say nitromethane. When did they start using that in drag racing?
Oh, my God, in the 40s.
Wow.
they had the so-called, this is an urban legend, two guys lined up their cars on the strip behind this is now the John Wayne Airport, but this was an abandoned base at the time, the Army Air Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And on the back strip they met, the guy had a supercharger on his flathead, roadster, I guess, and the other guy just had carburetors. And the guy with the supercharger drove there, but the guy with the carburetors towed it there. And so they unhooked, and the guy push-started the one with the carburetors. The other guy was running, and he was on gasoline. And so they came up, and a race in those days was from a roll. And so they came up, and as they were rolling pretty much side by side, the guy pulls a handkerchief or whatever. This was for money. And the unblown flathead Ford outran the supercharged flathead, which was unheard of.
Oh, yeah.
But it smelled funny. And that was it.
So the guy figured out, he must have had a little bit of chemistry background, and he figured out that this is going to work really well.
That or all he has airplane gas.
But he knew about the Germans using it in 1939. The Germans set all the records on the Autobahn, all the FIA records. The Hitler had commissioned Auto Union to build these race cars to take all of the FIA records to show the German superiority. So the Germans built these cars, and they were very interesting. I just saw one of them at the Goodwood Festival a couple years ago. A rear engine, V12s, roots-type blowers, zoomy headers, and nitromethane.
Oh, my gosh. Those things must have screamed.
Oh, yeah, they did. They set all the records.
Wow.
Now, the German scientists had figured out that that was the most powerful motor fuel you could possibly use, and the reason it is because it takes the oxygen into the combustion chamber in liquid form.
Right.
And, that adds power unbelievable, you know. Of course, you got to know what you're doing, and, you know, you've seen the drags and the TV where the whole car just blows to bits.
Oh, yes.
But that's nitromethane at its peak.
Well, and the engineers were smart enough, which is something you adapted later on in your drag racing career, is they put it behind the seat of the driver, so if it did go off, it was behind the driver and not in front of them.
Right. Yeah, all the shrapnel would be back there. And I'm sure they blew up and probably killed some people doing it.
Oh, yeah.
It wouldn't make any difference to them. They were just setting the records, and that's all that mattered, you know. Life was cheap for that kind of stuff to them guys. All of those Japan, all those places like that. You know, they had the suicide dive bombers. And
yep.
What's
yep.
a few human lives to win a race, right?
Jeez. Well, and then you, one of the things you did later on in your career was to adapt that rear motor to drag racing, weren't you?
Yeah, and of course, you know, I didn't invent anything. There'd been rear engine dragsters for years, but they were useless. But I knew about the German deal, about them being rear engine, and they did a mile run. They didn't just go a quarter of a mile. So that they did it, and they had much smaller tires. They didn't have the big, nice tires we got. And then, of course, I remember at 1964 at Indianapolis, Clark running the rear engine car around in a circle over 200 miles an hour. And I thought, if you can go around a track 200 miles an hour, why can't you go in a straight line? But I had a lot of trouble with it, getting it to perform right.
What was probably the biggest challenges to getting that to work?
Trying to get away from something that I had done for years and years. In other words, the slingshot dragster, you know, I was one of the first guys that had them. Not the very first, but one of the first. And, of course, they were hard to deal with, too, because the front end is so light on the ground. So,
well, you know what?
I had real fast steering on these cars.
Very good. You know, so, Don, I'm going to have to... Hold on, Don. I'm going to have to jump in. We got our break, so hang on with us.
Stay right here for more Don Gates and more Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, how would you like to have a chance to win a fully restored, four-on-the-floor, red 1965 Mustang? Well, you can. Linwood Rotary is raffling off this fully restored 65 Mustang at a car show near you. Chance to win this car is just $10 per raffle ticket. For more information and to find out where the car will be displayed, visit rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. Proceeds will go into funding local charities.
Get ready. It's coming. The 18th annual Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is happening September 9th, 2018. And yeah, you heard right. For the first time ever, classic motorcycles are included. If you have a hot rod, a rat rod, classic, custom, vintage car, truck, or motorcycle, this is the show for you. All vehicles must be 30 years old or older. That's 1988. This festival of steel and chrome will fill the streets of downtown Edmunds on Sunday, the 9th of September. It's a season-ending show, and it's all free to see. The streets will be lined with vendors, food, fun for the family, a pinup pageant by the Electric Pinup Dolls, and many special guests and one-of-a-kind customs. All new trophies and music from Danny Vernon. Register your entry at the Edmunds Chamber website or call direct. Pre-registrations get the best locations, so get on it right now. Still, just $25 per vehicle, as always. The Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is coming to cap the summer car show season. Why leave town when the fun is right here? Go to EdmundsClassicCarShow.com or call the Edmunds Chamber of Commerce. Crank up your ride, and we'll see you there.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Sensory sensitivity, repetitious behavior, lack of eye contact. You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
More Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust after these messages.
Hey, all you guys and gals. The next time you're hankering for a trip down memory lane, we recommend a visit to our Older Than the Hill Chateau de Smell Resort in Boondocks, Idaho, where the rooms smell like week-old cigarette smoke and month-old beer. Every weekend during the summer months, we feature our Old Maid Punkle Run, Gooder Trash Clam Bake, and Big Ted's Keg Toss. And don't forget our complimentary Bloody Mary morning appetizers to chase away those late night reveries. Sure enough, when you want to travel back and enjoy those old biker smell, then come to stay at Chateau de Smell, where our two mascots, Pit and Bull, will greet you at the gate and where we never leave the lights on. Because, hey, after all, we're going green. Chateau de Smell, because nothing beats the old days of smoky bars, stale beer, and crap on the carpet than a visit to Chateau de Smell. And for those who don't know how to spell Chateau de Smell, that's okay. We made it easy for you. It's smellit.com.
Welcome back to the third segment of Horsepower Chrome and Rust, and we have a great guest on tonight. Big Daddy Don Garlitz, also known as the Swamp Rat, and if you've been listening, you know where he got that name. It was a rival back in the 50s, and he put it on the side of his vehicle, and history was made that day. And so, Don, you were talking to us about the challenges of moving into a rear engine dragster, and you said mostly it was because of your involvement with a slingshot style of drag racing.
Yeah, I've been very successful with the slingshot, so I was very careful to take all of those successful deals and put them right on the rear engine car.
Mm.
And if you just touch the steering down course, it just ran right off the track. And I would consult with some of my friends around track guys, and they suggested that I speed the steering up, because setting up in front, it's by the time you realize it's doing something, it's too late. Well, that wasn't the answer. And so finally, after 3 months, I just kind of said under my breath, returning from the track one day, another failure, I said, if I didn't know better, I think the steering was too fast, because you can't even touch the steering wheel, and it goes off the track. And old Swangle, Connie Swangle, my chassis builder, he said, well, he said, if you think the steering's too fast, we'll just slow it down, because this ain't a slingshot. This is a front driver. So we went to the shop, slowed it all down, went to the track the next day, made a nice straight run, and the rest is history.
Wow.
So what year did you break the 200-mile-an-hour mark?
Well, that was on August the 1st, 1964.
64.
That was the official NHRA record that day.
Wow. You know, and that was the heyday. I mean, not the heyday, but, I mean, things were really popping in those early 60s. I mean, the beach movies, they had Muscle Beach Party, and they had the drag races on that with Frankie Avalon and at Funicello. Of course, that's right there in Southern California. But, I mean, that was already in the movies, and you know, by the mid-60s, I remember I was a elementary kid, and I'd go down to the library, and I'd be picking up these books, just little books for kids that had these beautiful color photographs of your car and the little red wagon and all these cars, and I just fell in love with those. And then we'd watch you guys on Wild World of Sports on Saturday afternoon, and that was just like a whole breakaway, that the whole, it really came of its own there in early mid-60s, and then moved right on through to the late 60s, early 70s, didn't it?
Yeah, well, you're right about that mid-60s. That was the heyday of the top fuel dragster.
Yep.
At Bakersfield, at the U.S. Fuel and Gas Championships in 1965, that 120 fuel dragsters entered the race.
Wow.
You're lucky to get 17 enter a race today.
Oh, yeah.
They ran a 64-car field on Saturday and a 32-car field on Sunday.
Wow.
Incredible.
Well, I even remember in the mid-70s, they'd always have the 64 funny cars down at, you know, International Seattle IRS and all that. But yeah, that was like that was the precursor to, you know, TV was limited, radio, and there was no computers, there wasn't all this other stuff, and it was a lot of people got introduced to it watching TV, and it was just surfing took off at that same time. I mean, you have that surfing, and then the motorcycle industry with the Hondas, they just took, I mean, everything kind of baby boomer plus older, there was something magic about that mid-60s, wasn't there?
Yeah, there certainly was. I loved it. It was, we'd run three and four times a week at different tracks, you know, just tow 500 miles down the road doing it. It was called barnstorming. And I mean, I'd run 50 races in like a half a year.
Wow.
You didn't run hardly any in the winter. You know, the tracks were all froze over back in the East, but I'd put on 50 match races in a season.
Wow. Now, when you were doing that, were you running for, you got cash prizes?
very few races did I actually run that just gave cash prizes. And in '64, when I won the Nationals, you didn't get any money. I got a new Mustang and a toolbox.
Oh, wow. So
my money was made barnstorming. I would get $1,250, $1,500 just to kick it out of the trailer and mass race the local guy. Every track had a local fueler, and they loved to bring the champion in and give their local guy a shot at him.
Oh, so you were like the out-of-town featured guy, and probably the same thing with some of your rivals with Mongoose and Shirley Mondowney, and these you were all doing kind of the same thing, right? You'd be hired to come in town. And
if the track had a lot of money, they'd get two of us, like me and Shirley, or me and the Snake, or me and the Mongoose, or the Caramacinas. They'd hire two of the guns, and then you'd have a real good race because these cars were pretty well matched.
That's it, because it was like the old grudge match, and it was kind of like what they did in World Wrestling Federation, but it was drag racing. They really understood how to build characters, build brands, and build enthusiasm around it.
Yeah, they all had monikers, the Snake, the Mongoose, Cha-Cha, the Greek, the Crazy Greek, all that stuff, you know. They all had nicknames.
Jungle Jim and Green Elephant.
Right.
Green Elephant, Little Red Wagon, which you have in your shop, if I understand.
I did have. I don't have it anymore.
Okay.
It's gone now.
But, I mean, that was in its class. I mean, it was a cool vehicle to see. I mean, it's just a very unique drag car, and people would show up just to see that thing go down the strip
on the rear wheels. And you know, it wasn't meant to do that. It was meant to be a race car, and they took it out and tested it, and the front end come up, and they put some weight on it, and the front end still come up. And the guy says, what would the people, and it would go as far as they wanted it to, but they just couldn't steer it. So Bill Golden, Maverick is his nickname, he figured out how to put a little hole in the floorboard so that he could see with it up like that, and then he made a brake system. He could brake one or the other, the rear wheels, more or less, and that's how they steered it. And he devised all that, and he became world famous for it.
You know, and I think his technology was probably applied to some of the stunt vehicles that were used in movies and TV shows, because you'd have these guys jumping or doing a wheelie all the way down the road. And he was a wheel stander. He'd go down the whole track, and I mean, people would just you'd just watch that and you go in amazement. And then of course I was out on my
130 miles an hour on a rear wheel.
That's right. Of course us kids were out on our stingrays doing the same thing.
That's right.
Well, and some of your, I mean, when did you get inducted into the Hall of Fame?
Which one?
Well, let's see. You've had a number of them. Let's see. The National Hot Rod Association. I am looking at the. Well, tell us some of the ones you've been introduced into.
Well, I'm in the Motorsports Hall of Fame that used to be in Novi, Michigan, which has now been moved to Daytona Beach, where it's done much, much better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also in the Talladega Motorsports Hall of Fame. That's the big one in Talladega. And of course, I have the Drag Racing Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Which this is our 29th year coming up.
Wow.
And, I don't count being in that one because the selectors just put me in. I wasn't supposed to be in there. It's my own Hall of Fame. And I'm in the British Drag Racing Hall of Fame. That's an important one overseas.
Now, did you get to race over there? Did you end up traveling over to Britain and do some drag racing over there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've been over many times. I was on the American drag team that went over and introduced the British to drag racing in 1964, and we just ran around on the RAF bases.
Wow. I didn't
know.
I didn't even know that was such a big thing over there.
Oh yeah, it's really big. They have a real nice track there now, Santa Pod. And once a year, they have this great big black tie ceremony and put people in the Hall of Fame. And they usually put a few Americans in every year, too.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, this is great. 64, you're running over there. You're a goodwill ambassador for drag racing into Britain. And then I know Australia is big in drag racing.
Yeah, it was so funny. 197, and that was the British land speed record. So nobody had ever had beaten that. Then I later went back in 76 and raised it to 234. Of course, now it's went up beyond that.
Well, and so one of the things that I enjoyed is that you did not only were you a top dog racer, but you and your competitors. You alluded to it earlier. You did a lot of promotion of yourself and getting out there. Talk to us about the life of your racing and then your promoting. And then you're racing and you're promoting sometimes at the same time. I suspect in your downtime in the winter you were doing a lot more along with working on your vehicles. But talk to us about the whole importance of how to promote yourself in that area.
Well, you have to be seen, and we didn't have any television until way, way late. It was the late 60s before we actually got a little bit of television coverage. But prior to that, you had to be everywhere, and that's why I just told you. I'd run Wednesday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday, all different places, being seen by as many people as possible, and every week. And all back and forth across the country. I never forget one time I ran Cecil County, Maryland, and then the next weekend I ran in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Wow.
Wow.
A long drive. But then look how that exposed you to so many people, see. And I was a lot of times people would ask me, is there two of you or two cars, two teams? No way you could possibly be in all these places like you are, but we did. And that's how I got famous. I got famous before TV. I got famous by just barnstorming, like those stunt pilots used to do. They'd go around their little plane and just land in a field everywhere and put on a little air show and on to the next place.
Oh, that makes total sense. So now you were married at that time. Did your wife go along with you, or what about a crew or any?
Yeah, that was the crew, the wife. And then when we had the kids and they had to go to school, then she stayed home and I had to get a crew guy to help me.
Oh, bless her heart. So she knew coming into this that this is how you made your living, and she was
No. Drag racing, when we got married, it was 1953. There wasn't any drag racing.
Oh!
And certainly no money. The money never appeared until 1964. That's when I started really making good money.
Well, Don,
I realized I could make a living at it.
You know what? We're coming up to the end of our break, and I am thinking this is the first time we've done this, but Brady's not here. If you've got another 10 minutes, I'd love to catch you on one more segment and wrap this up. Would that be okay with you?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay. This is wonderful because there's a lot to cover. I think Shane's got a few questions he wants to answer, or wants answered, or ask, I should say. And I want to find out a little bit about your career before you went full-time drag racing and how you were able to afford getting into drag racing, and then we'll shift gears and chat a little bit about your museum. So hang on there, Don, and folks, hang with us. We'll be right back with more of Don Garlitz in the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Show, and stick with us. We'll be right back. For all your parts cleaning needs, turn to Ravenstone Vapor Honing. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is a fast, economical, safe alternative to standard media blasting. Ravenstone Vapor Honing uses a system developed by Rolls-Royce back in 1944. A water-based cleaning system that restores parts back to factory condition with no scouring or heating to metal or damage to rubber and plastic parts. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is located in Snohomish, Washington. RavenstoneVaporHoning.com. Redefining the way parts restoration is done.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey everyone, Steve Johan here, producer of the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Show. If any of you have ever thought about or ridden a motorcycle, then I want to invite you to listen to a new show called World of Motorcycling, where we cover rider culture and the motorcycling world. World of Motorcycling is an informative and entertaining podcast featuring John Davis, Walt Fletcher, and me, Steve Johan. You can listen to the show at worldofmotorcycling.podomatic.com, where we'll be waiting for you.
Get ready, it's coming. The 18th Annual Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is happening September 9th, 2018. And yeah, you heard right. For the first time ever, classic motorcycles are included. If you have a hot rod, a rat rod, classic, custom, vintage car, truck, or motorcycle, this is the show for you. All vehicles must be 30 years old or older. That's 1988. This festival of steel and chrome will fill the streets of downtown Edmonds on Sunday, the 9th of September. It's a season-ending show, and it's all free to see. The streets will be lined with vendors, food, fun for the family, a pinup pageant by the Electric Pinup Dolls, and many special guests and one-of-a-kind customs. All new trophies and music from Danny Vernon. Register your entry at the Edmonds Chamber website or call direct. Pre-registrations get the best locations, so get on it right now. Still, just $25 per vehicle, as always. The Edmonds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is coming to cap the summer car show season. Why leave town when the fun is right here? Go to EdmundsClassicCarShow.com or call the Edmunds Chamber of Commerce. Crank up your ride and we'll see you there.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go fish, Dad!
Oh, come on!
This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil.
It only takes a moment.
This is Elton Roundhill and Shane Osborne with E-Company Customs in Linwood, Washington. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
This is Robert with Bonbrunner Motorsport. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
We're back with the fourth segment of Horsepower Chrome and Rust. And more of our interview with Don.
So, Don, we left off on the last segment there with you sharing that you didn't really start making big bucks until and seeing a lifestyle out of this until the early about 64. So between the time you got married and that time, what did you do for a career that allowed you to tinker with cars and eventually move into that?
Travel as much as you did.
Well, it didn't take very much to get into drag racing then. We just ran our stock automobile. In fact, I won my first trophy with my 50 Ford in the stock division. I still have it in my office, just a little plastic thing with a little gold angel on it. And that was about the extent of it. And in other words, we just raced at the drags for fun. It was some place you could race and you didn't get into trouble. Before then, you raced at stoplights. But that was illegal, and you got in a lot of trouble for that. So we were so happy to get these airports, these old abandoned airports from World War II, and be able to have drags on them. And of course, everybody always wanted to go faster, so they soon modified the cars, and some even got to the point you couldn't be driven on the street anymore, and they just towed them to the races, and pretty soon there was dragsters. But still, it was just amateur, very amateur. Now, some of the tracks were run by people that had an idea that maybe you could make a little money, so they started giving out trophies, and you could win a bigger trophy, you know, a nice trophy. And then the associations got involved, and they tried to, you know, standardize everything, the NHRA, the AHRA, the ITAA, the AATA. It was a half a dozen of them, but of course, then the NHRA ended up being the one that controls it completely today. But we, like I say, I had a garage. I had my own business since 1956. The 3 years before that marriage, I just worked in the body shop built my cars at night at home under the oak tree out front. That's a fact. Kept all the neighbors up all night. And they didn't cost very much. In fact, the first car, which is now designated Swampfront 1, when I took it to California, they paid me a lot of money to come out there with it, $4,500, which was a whopping sum in those days.
Oh, yeah.
It only cost $1,000 or less to build the car and the trailer that I took to California. That was how inexpensive it was in those days. And that's why it appealed to so many people, because anybody could race that wanted to and just wanted to work hard. That ain't the way it is today. It's a multi-million dollar operation to run a fuel dragster today. Where in a fuel dragster in 1959 and 60 was very inexpensive.
You know,
a lot of hard work and dangerous.
It was dangerous, but again, I'm a product of, I was born in 59, so born right when you were really starting off and you're racing there. And in high school, my buddies had muscle cars and whatever, and we did the, I hate to say it, but we did light to light, or we did it out in the country roads. And because there was no place in my township or anywhere nearby that anybody said, hey, we think we could rent the local. I mean, we had a local airport that wasn't too far away, and they could have just said, why don't we just rent it out on a Saturday night or whatever for a few hours and have all the kids and the adults that want to. But no, they didn't. So kids wanting to go fast, we end up doing it. And that was a very dangerous thing too. And I often thought part of maybe the demise of drag racing was the removal of all those opportunities for kids to actually do it in a safe place, which would have progressed into being on the strip. Have you ever thought about that yourself?
Well, maybe. I don't know. The strip was really a good place. Our club, we had a rule, if you got in any kind of trouble, any tickets or anything, you didn't get to go to the next race. And boy, people didn't want to do that, so they kept their noses clean so they could be at the drags.
I see.
We had so much fun doing that. You know, this is before any money or anything was involved.
Right.
But just a place where you could just go run all day long, just run the wheels off your car. And we really looked forward to it. Usually only had it like once a month. But that was plenty. It gave us plenty of time to work on them and tune them up and try to make them faster.
Well, and now it's like you said, it's a rich man's game. They have the nostalgia drags, and we know some guys up here who've got some cars that they've built up, and they take them out on the drag days. But the crowds aren't like they used to be, and the money's bigger, and these guys are spending millions of dollars to build cars that go well over 300 miles an hour in an eighth-mile distance. And it really, to me, it kind of puts off 99% of all people are never going to be able to get there, so unless you can do the nostalgia drags, that's just going to knock down the whole interest level in drag racing. Have you seen that?
Yeah, even the nostalgia is real expensive.
Yes, it is.
If you have a stalker, it's expensive. I mean, I've got a couple of stalkers that I go run because I don't really like the 300-mile-hour cars anymore. They are too fast.
Yep.
And I run these stalkers. It's very expensive just to run them. So the whole thing just got completely out of control, and it's all about the money. And that the money wasn't in there to start with, but now it is.
Well, I think.
So what is your most memorable run?
Well,
or favorite, everyone.
It was before I'd ever went fast, and I made some modifications to my car, and I took it to the drag strip. It went 176.4, and nobody had ever been that fast before. Nobody had ever been in the 170s. And it was, I couldn't believe it had went so fast, but it did. And but that was just the beginning of the following year, went 180. But I have been 323 miles an hour, and I don't mind telling you that took my breath away.
Wow. Now, was that a quarter mile or an eighth?
Quarter mile.
Yep.
I ran some 8 mile, but I never ran the 1,000 foot like they run now in Top Fuel. I quit before they shortened the distance.
Yeah.
All my stuff is quarter mile. I've been 8 mile a few times and I had a few records in it, but I didn't pay much attention to 8 mile. I'm a quarter mile guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I like. Well, Don, I just want to plug your museum. Where can people find out about your museum?
Well, you know, I have to tell you a little bit about it. You know, in 1956, I went in business for myself, and in my museum, I have all the original equipment that I had in that garage, and you can see it there. And that museum is what morphed from my early shops. In other words, all that stuff I had and cars and things is all there, and it's here in Ocala, exit 341 on Interstate 75. We're open 7 days a week, 9 to 5, only closed on Thanksgiving and Christmas. And it's really easy to find, lots of parking, got lots of truck parking. We really accommodate the truckers because I really hate over the years of dragging the trailer around and not having any place to park is hateful.
Well, so, Don,
lots of nice restaurants nearby that within walking distance, and you need to come early because you cannot see it in one day. There's 65,000 square feet.
Wow.
Well, hold on. There's our music. And, Don, it's been great having you on with us, and I hate to cut you off, but we've run out of time. So thanks for Don coming on. Check out garlitz.com for more information of his museum, and we'll be right back with the last segment of our show. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, how would you like to have a chance to win a fully restored four-on-the-floor red 1965 Mustang? Well, you can. Linwood Rotary is raffling off this fully restored 65 Mustang at a car show near you. Chance to win this car is just $10 per raffle ticket. For more information and to find out where the car will be displayed, visit rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. Proceeds will go into funding local charities.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Do you suffer from gastrointestinal anguish after eating spicy foods at your local Mexican restaurant? Do you suffer outrageous amounts of flatulence after eating greasy foods at your local fast food joint? Do you suffer from acid reflux after ingesting copious amounts of alcoholic beverages at your local drinking hole? Then call the law offices of Ambulance and Chaser at 1-800-782-5377, where we've helped thousands of so-called victims just like yourself. If you call us today at 1-800-782-5377, we'll make sure to send you out our free guide, The Top 20 Medical Issues Most Likely to Be Sued Over. But act today, because the longer you wait, the less chance you have to win your case. The law offices of Ambulance and Chaser are making the most out of your misery. Please be advised, the law firm of Ambulance and Chaser is not licensed to practice law in all 50 states and may be called into question by the federal government for questionable practices.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit the Shelter Pet Project.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Help us if you can. You're an El Camino. El Camino man. Only you can understand. Help us if you can. You're an El Camino.
Welcome back to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Steve, this song should be for you.
It is.
Now we're at the last segment of our show this evening, and we just had a Mr. Don Garlitz on, and that was quite the experience.
It was quite a treat, and I hope everybody enjoyed that. Tell all your friends so they can come and check out the show. Share us with all your friends. Make sure to go to our Facebook page and like us, and put out the word. We need people to listen to the show because we're expanding and growing and got a lot of cool things coming down the pike.
Yeah. Speaking of shows, it was Edmunds Classic this last weekend.
That's right. We were there.
Over 400 cars showed up.
Yep.
And there's over 100,000 people was what I heard.
You know, we didn't get them, though, where we were at.
No, we were on the back end of it.
And I'm like, Brady, you shoved me down there. And you know what? There was an ex where I thought we were supposed to be.
Yes, we were supposed to be up by the 80s, and got a phone call the night before from the president of the Chamber of Commerce that told us we were moving spots.
Oh, my gosh. I could have probably gone down and stuck my table, though, down
there. You probably
there.
Could have.
And next year, I'm going to. I am going to, because we got probably, I don't think there was 100,000. I think that's over number. But anyways, there was a lot of people, and it was busy all day long. Yeah, I missed everything because we were way down at the end of the road.
Although we did get to see the dragsters fire up a couple times.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And boy, that was loud. That was loud. And it, and kind of like the dragsters that Don used to race.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Well, and then we have another show. I think I put it down here. It's the SEMA show.
Oh, yeah. That's coming up here in February, right?
Well, it... my gosh, I'm looking for my sheets. Where is it at? Where is it at?
We're also going to be having the last Hot Rod Church for the season.
Oh, okay.
We're actually going to do a barbecue. So anyone that wants to come on down and check out the shop before we shut down for this year, for the season.
That's right. And when is that?
It'll be the first Sunday of next month.
Of October.
Yes.
Very good. So come on by E Company Customs and check us out. We'll be hanging out there in the morning from 7 to 10. And actually, it's going to be open a little later.
We're going to be open later. We're going to do this one in probably about 9 o'clock to mid-afternoon and barbecue and fun for the family.
Good.
And it's all going to be catered and free to everybody that shows up.
Excellent. Now, I can't tell anybody what the trivia question is, because that will be for Brady the next week. So, folks,
he's holding the secrets back.
Yes, he is. Really quickly, I wanted to ask you. I have seen two different companies advertised on YouTube. Chrome paint. They spray it. They chrome it. And one of them I was very impressed with, and then I went on and started doing some research, and then you come to find out it's not good. And then another one said, oh, no, this is how we do it, and it was a much more laborious way, and it tends to hold up better. They're the ones that do the big monster truck guys and all that. Mm-hmm. I don't know which one it was, but have you worked with any of that stuff?
I haven't. I have worked with the chrome that's powder coating.
Yes.
It's basically a silver that you put on and bake it, and then you can polish it to be pretty close to chrome.
Right, and this is all just paint.
Yeah, it's just all paint.
It's silver pigment in the paint, and then they put it on, so it's multiple coats, and then it comes out, and it looks just like chrome.
Yeah, it looks close to chrome.
You can and you can bend it and move it and stuff, but then somebody was saying that within a year, it starts having problems.
Yes, you start to see the silver pucks in it, and
it
doesn't last like chrome does.
It's not really, it's great for producing certain things and stuff, but it's not where you want to keep it in the weather. And
no, it's really nice for doing like interior pieces.
There you go.
You want some plastics and stuff. Yeah, it's really good for that.
Well, there's our music sign that we need to get going. So thanks to everybody for being on with us, and we just want to say I'm looking for that. There we go.
Keep the wheels down and the rubber spinning.
Yeah, well.
All that good stuff Brady says.
Yeah. for Shane, Brady, and myself, we just want to say thanks for listening, and we will see you out on the road.